What's up, my drinking comrades, and welcome to another episode of the Beverage Cake Podcast, dedicated to the discussion surrounding beverages with an Asian perspective. I'm your resident host, Sean Oh, co-founder of the Beverage Cake Academy, which focuses on drinks advocacy for the professionals and masses. Now, for this episode, we have landed ourselves in the world's highest urban microbrewery, Level 33. As always, before we get into our interview, to bring education value to our listeners who are still studying for their various beverage exams, I will start the session with a flashcard question and reveal the answer towards the end of the episode. Now, this month's question will be sake related. In which prefecture does the best Yamada Nishiki rice usually grown in? So, well, Michael might know this. Remember to stay tuned for the answer at the end of the episode. And let's start our interview proper. Now, our featured guest today is Mr. Michael Chi.
Hello.
Hi.
Director of Experience from Level 33. He's also a fellow Beverage Click alumnus, having certifications spanning across being a certified whiskey ambassador, attaining the WSET Level 2 award in wine, as well as a certified sake sommelier that's conferred by the SSA. Well, it's great having you.
Thank you.
Thank you, how's it going?
It's tough. Like all F&B right now, we don't have enough staff to.
Oh man, yeah.
So hopefully one day, government will think of some method to help us open up quotas and things like that.
So it's very tightly. Manpower is a bit of an issue right now. How are you guys coping?
We're using an app called Stuffy to get part-timers to come in. So like right now, there's school holidays happening. So quite a number of them that came in to assist. But then again, the level of service will be a little bit different because they are new. When they come in on the first day, I don't expect much from them. But obviously, we will do the bare minimum training with them. Mm. Apart from that, the full-timers will definitely do the lead role of the floor.
Yeah. Okay. Right, and you are covering a lot of ground, I suppose.
My nickname here is Director of Stewarding. So if because COVID is still rampant, my staff are also getting COVID, but touch wood, luckily is one by one. Mm-hmm. So with that, whoever goes down with COVID, I will automatically assume their duty, and one of it was stewarding duty, which is clearing of plates, dirty plates and things like that. That's when I go down, dirty, get everything done.
Well, it's a tough life, tough life in F&B. It's not all bit of roses, right? Have you already gotten COVID?
Yes, I got it on the second day of Chinese New Year. Okay. So while everyone was celebrating, I was basically sitting at home in the bedroom.
Well, I've got a minor as well. So, we're on the same boat.
Yeah.
Now, from memory, I recall you as a person who really loved hospitality as well as F&B.
Yeah.
So it's great to see that, you have you're doing your own thing, you're doing very well. Perhaps fill in our listeners on how you started this journey in this trade.
Oh, okay. Basically, my family used to own a cafe, a bakery cafe back in Malaysia, because that's where I was from. Definitely that wasn't my start, but there was some sort of like beginning. After moving to Singapore, because of Singapore Airlines, I was there for 13 years. So with that, I actually honed my skill from Singapore Airlines. It was a very good training ground, I must say. And with that, I say, 13 years of flying, I think is more than enough of leaving the country day after day, so... That's when I left the airlines and got into a private clubhouse.
Yep.
Yeah, when I did operations manager. It was quite a tough 2 years, which in between I went into wine distribution and learned more about how we do importing, how we choose our products, what sort of products to list, and how do we approach Horeca, B2B, B2C. So much to learn from there. But in the end, I'm still a people person, so that's why I left and joined a restaurant.
Yeah, well, I do concur that actually SI is one of the best training grounds for anybody who is, interested in hospitality. So again, to give more context, Michael and I actually used to be ex-colleagues back in SIA. So I can I can fully understand, you know, 13 years in the airline. That's well, there's a lot of experience that you can that brings to the current trade. Now, since we are here at Level 33, would you like to tell us a little bit more about what Level 33 is about?
Level 33, basically, like what you said just now, we are the highest microbrewery in Singapore and actually the world. So we did our research before we claimed that anyway. So being on the 33rd floor, everything was craned up from our ledge, outdoor ledge. So all these Lautens are actually made in Austria, shipped into Singapore and carried up, well, fixed in. So even the floor has to be... how do I put it? Constructed whereby it can hold the weight. Yeah, okay. Because outside I got six tanks and each tank is supposed to hold 2,000 liters. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So from, well, the viewers or the listeners won't be able to see this, but from my view, I do see two tanks.
Yeah.
So there's another four.
There's a mesh tun and lao tun. Yeah.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, there's another six more when you walk in from the doorway.
Oh, right, right, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those
yeah,
yeah. where... the beers are actually macerated.
Yeah, and your beer consumption is really high here. Well, it is very microbrewery. Yeah. So you were just telling me earlier on before the podcast that it's...
almost daily.
Yeah, so your brewer actually has to brew daily.
Yeah.
So it's daily fresh daily brew.
We are brewing. Because like, for example, wheat beer just went off yesterday, you know, 86. Okay. So today he just managed to brought it up back at 2 p.m. Yeah. Wow. Because we only have like few core beers.
Yep.
And one of it is what we call the seasonal beer. So seasonal beer is something that we change every time we finish. Yeah. So one of the most notable seasonal beer that we have every year would be the hoppy beer. So for example, last December we had our last anniversary, though it was not a good time and year, but we still have to do something for our anniversary. So last year was 11 year, so we call it Hoppy 11, which consists of 11 types of hops.
Hoppy 11, yeah. That's a very catchy name.
So you can guess that the next coming one is going to be Hoppy 12.
Hoppy 12? How innovative. Okay. Okay, well, we'll talk a little bit more about your beers in a bit. I'm quite actually interested to find out a little bit more about your restaurant's beverage list. So I've did a little bit of research, and I'm sure you know most of our listeners or viewers will be able to find your beverage list online. It's actually quite interesting. Would you like to maybe share a little bit more about how the philosophy is for the beverage list? How was it curated? I'm sure you have a hand in terms of curating a list. What, you know, what kind of structure?
So very important over here, which is based on what my boss, Dr. Martin Bam, foresee his beverage list to be. This will be a good pointers for those who are in the distribution side if they want to get in contact with us. But basically, whatever we list, let's say for the wines, right, it has to be 5,000 cases and below. That's a must. That's number one.
5,000 cases and below.
Yeah. So that basically streamlined down to majority are boutique wines.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So you need to be really craft, handmade, and boutique style.
Correct.
I see. Does this apply to all your beverages?
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Okay.
And then the next one will be definitely best if it's not listed on any supermarkets or even online platforms such as Lazada, Shopee.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. So it needs to be also specially curated by yourself, making sure that it's not so easily accessible. Okay. Okay. Good. Yeah. Good point.
Thirdly, it has to taste good, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, definitely, right?
For example, our house pour, our wine house pour. Generally, in the market, they are looking at $20 to $25. I mean, max $25.
Yep.
For house pour cost price, but ours is not. Ours is much higher.
Okay.
Yeah.
And would you say that, because you are in the MBFC area, so would you say that alcohol consumption is really high here? You know,
really high. I'm here only for a year, so when I joined, it was still a lockdown. But right now, I can see the full picture of how it was pre-COVID. And today, we have a lot of office people around us, especially, you know, DBS. You have your Stan Chart here as well. They are coming up daily, daily.
On a daily basis?
Daily basis, yeah.
Oh, well, people in finance need to drink after all. Okay.
Yeah.
I do see a lot of unique selling points on your beverage list. I noticed that there are beer cocktails as well as Japanese sake. So maybe, you know, walk us through how does this beer cocktail, you know,
came about?
Yeah, came about, or how does the Japanese sake, you know, work into your list?
I mean, I've been to a few breweries around. I mean, being traveling for 13 years, especially in Singapore as well, not many breweries actually focus on anything other than beer. Let's say, for example, a brewery, if they were to open an F&B, their focus is beer, yes. But it's all on the tap, you know, freshness, this and that. But no one wants to explore the how versatile a beer can be. So that's when they first started 11 years ago, coming to 12, they had a celebrity mixologist, Javier, to create three different cocktails, beer cocktails, right? So it incorporates a liquor, a mixer, can be a few types, and definitely top up with beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that is three, and then we created another three ourselves. Yeah. So it can be like, for example, I can't remember one of it. It's actually a blueberry with stout, right?
Okay.
So like we've been to London before, right?
Yep.
Remember?
Oh yeah, yeah. We call the beer stout that had black currant in, inside.
Yeah, yeah. Or we call it Guinness and black, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's similar, but imagine it to be more explosion to it. Yeah.
Okay, so a lot more fruitier.
Yeah.
Do you think that this is a better sellout for ladies or?
Oh,
more?
Definitely. Because ladies that drinks beer over here is definitely very minimal, but they are willing to explore if it's a beer cocktail.
Okay. Mm. So this is like a bit like an entry point to people who want, or you want to introduce beer to, and then
correct.
You can use cocktails as a and mean. Okay, as a means to it. Okay.
But that doesn't mean that our beer is not good for ladies. There are that like wheat beer as well. Because
okay.
Our wheat beer, due to the yeast that is used, it gives out banana flavor. Similar to sake as well.
Okay.
Right? For example, yeast number 9 for sake.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Showing off your knowledge already.
You taught me.
Well done, well done. Okay, okay. So beer cocktails is a thing. Yes. What about your Japanese sake? So I noticed that there's a small list and it seems to be growing. How do you actually present it? In your restaurant?
Yeah, so when I joined the company, my boss saw that I have the interest to do sake sommelier. So that's when he said, okay, go and get it done. And then we will list sake, because it was always his goal to explore into sake.
Sounds like a very supportive boss.
And with that, I think I came to you straight away, and within a month or two I got the SSA.
Yeah, you got a certification. Yeah. Yes, yes. I recall that.
It was that fast. And right away, I called two suppliers. They came over. We did the tastings, and 6 sakes was already listed.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah.
It's not very common to find, and I'm saying this based on observation, it's not very common to find non-Japanese cuisine restaurants actually listing it. So, you know, on behalf of the Japanese sake community, you know, I applaud your effort to try and promote it.
Arigato gozaimasu.
Oh, nice. Your Japanese has been improving as well. Okay. So besides beer, what else actually sells well here? I noticed that there are a lot of wines.
Yeah. So like right now, we are in this room called Baron de Rothschild room. It's actually a sponsored room.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. With that, Baron de Rothschild champagne is definitely number one here. So that will be our main champagne on our list, apart from Cristal, Krug, and so on. Dom Perignon, sorry, not Krug, Dom Perignon. Yeah. So we tie up as well with Chateau Mouton.
Yeah.
So right now, if you're interested to come over, we do have Chateau Mouton from 1982 onwards until 1991.
Very good year. Because, that's 82 the year that I was born.
it's not moving that fast, but it's something good to,
well, I think it's a novelty.
Yeah, it's novelty.
Plus, it's, I mean, not every day, not everybody will be able to, you know, afford a 1982.
Yeah.
But I could probably afford it, but you know, that would cost a hole in my pocket. So,
okay. Oh, joking.
I'm not joking, but okay. So like a private room like that, how much is the, you know, how much does one need to pay to be able to do a host event here?
For example, for lunch, the whole private dining room can sit around 30 pax. You are looking at about 1,008 minimum spending.
Okay, okay. So, yeah. Still reasonable. Yeah.
Evening comes 5,000.
5,000. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So and do they need to drink Mouton Rose Chill?
No. Basically, that's the best part of, I find that, our event here is because we give them a minimum spending. It doesn't matter what they spend on. There's no room charge or a cover charge for that space.
I see.
Yeah, space charge. Different from what you do in hotel, they tell you, okay, the space is this much, I'm charging you. The balance is what you need to spend on. Yeah. Mm. So like right over here, 5,000, no matter how many packs you have, if you don't even hit 5,000, let's say you hit 3,000, the balance 2,000, you can always purchase takeaway wines, you know.
Oh, so you do takeaway as well.
Yeah, so you can retail. If you take away, you get to enjoy some more.
right.
Yeah, so it's a very, very well worth it kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean it's quite encouraging to see that a place whereby it was focused on micro brewing for beer has started to move into things like wines to sake, to cocktails. Some people might think that it's a bit of a dilution of identity, but I don't think so. I think this offers a lot of alternatives.
Yeah. I mean, in the end, beer is still core. Mm-hmm. So you're wondering, like just now you asked, what else is selling well here?
Yep.
To our surprise, it was actually our non-alcoholic beverages.
Mm.
Because come weekend, you will see a lot of families coming up, at times even during weekday dinner. And we have young kids to babies, and prams and things like that, you know? Yep. So we are open to everyone. There's no proper dress code. People who are, you know, just exercising downstairs.
Yep.
After exercising, they come out for beer, you know, just to cool off.
I'm probably overdressed.
That's one
today.
Best way to cool off. You know? So with that, that's why our non-alcoholic beverages actually shot up sky high.
Okay.
But today we are seeing a lot of wine sales. Our sake is still doing a little bit slow, and that's why coming this 30th June.
Mm-hmm.
So this one out when?
Yep, sure. Okay. Well, it'll be out. Will it be out soon? I guess so. It's fine. You can always you know, mention and promote that you are running events.
Yeah, So this 30th June we are running a Hyakumoku sake pairing dinner, and I told my chef very simple. I want everything to be westernized.
Okay.
Yeah, because over here we are modern Western with a touch of Asian.
Right.
Right. So I want my guests to experience, or whoever that comes for a pairing, to experience that how sake is versatile enough to be paired with a Western dish. So it opens up another new horizon, because today people might be afraid. You say, hey, if I'm not having sashimi, I won't be having sake. Yeah, I'm not having a sushi, I'm not having a sake. But think about it. If you have a yakitori, which is basically over the charcoal grill, it's the same thing as Western food.
Yep, I agree. Well, at least the cooking methods are the same.
Yeah,
right, very similar. And there is some form of versatility when it comes to pairing sake with food.
Yeah,
and I totally see where you're coming from. I totally agree. So, you know, on the point about low alcohol or no alcohol, even mocktails. Do you do active pairing here, or is it something that it just so happens that people are, you know, are ordering? Do you do any active pairing with your clients?
I mean, we try as much as we can.
Yep.
But being the only sommelier in-house, it's a little bit hard, because even though I'm a director of experience here, I'm not supposed to have a station. But due to the manpower, I do have a station.
Oh, you have a station?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if I leave my station, it's a little bit difficult. But as and when a customer were to ask, hey, can I have a question with the sommelier, so because I want to choose some wines, and that's where I actually step in.
Okay, good. Well, sommeliers are in need.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So please, whoever is who has knowledge and would like to shift to the trade industry, please, you know, reach out to the different F&B establishments. Mm. This is a bit of a shout out. Okay. Now, since you mentioned that you are the sommelier, besides being the director of experience, if you had free reign, what would you change about the list? Because clearly, when you first came here, you're already starting to make changes, but you know, it's still, there is still a certain structure behind it.
Yeah.
So if you had free reign, you can do whatever you want, right? Without the your bosses breathing down your neck, what would you change?
Okay, right now, like I'm a whiskey ambassador, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my whiskey list is actually very, very short. So that's one of my project, that my pet project, that I want to increase the list, you know, of whiskey offering that we have here.
Okay.
And also thank to you, you got me registered for me, space.
To be to be accredited as a, as a venue. That's right, that's right.
So as one of the venue, we have to have that kind of offering. We cannot be having like 6 whiskeys and 3 bourbons on the list. It's very pathetic.
Yeah. Right.
So that is number one. We used to sell a lot of whiskeys pre-COVID.
Okay.
But people maybe just started to forget about this space. Downstairs, if you will notice, Irwin's, our sister company, Irwin's Boulevard, Harry's, people are, almost every table has a bottle of whiskey, but not here. So I'm trying to change that mindset, that concept. So when we open it back up, right, whiskeys that expired, usually we keep for a month, but it was 2 years old. I told my host to call them back. I said, why? It's already expired. Why are you bothering? You know? I said, no, it's not about that. It's that if the customer received this call, he'll say, hey, you still remember me. You know, I'll definitely come back. Because you not only honor my 1 month, you honor me 2 years.
Yeah. So just to make it clear, the expiration that you're talking about is not that whiskey doesn't really expire. It does lose its freshness, but you're saying that the time spent here.
Yes. That we keep it in-house for them is only one month. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. So with that, I have customers who came back 2 years later to finish that bottle of whiskey, and with that they open another one. To me, that's good business, you know? But it's also the relationship that we are building with them.
Yep.
Yeah. So that is number one. And the next thing is definitely going to be my my sake. I'm going to build up the sake listings.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something we used to sell, Kuheji.
Ah, yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
I would like to list the Kuheji wines because whatever wines we have today, the region is almost similar across the board. You know, one menu after another. It's always your old worlds and then Australia, New Zealand now. It's new world, but it's been there for so long. You know, they've been producing for so long. I think they put them as under old world classification, really.
Yeah. Well, those wines are going to take some time because it's based on allocation.
Yeah.
As far as you know.
The supplier is chasing me.
I see.
So that would be one of it because Japanese wine, I mean, if you can do that.
Well, if you're talking about
Japanese brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're talking about Japanese wines, there are Japanese wines in the market. Have you ever considered Japanese wines?
I will. You know, I don't mind because in the end, when you come here, you want to open a wine, you don't want to always have the same thing. You want something different at definitely a comfortable price point where it's comfortable for your pocket and you enjoy your dinner.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about, I got the good wines and that's about it. I cannot be every table. You want a Chateau Mouton?
No, it doesn't work like that, right? Oh, it might bring you the, you know, more revenue if you're selling every, you know, Mouton at every table.
Yeah.
But okay, I see where you're coming from. So it's good that, you know, you're very receptive towards having different drinks from different places on your list. So I think a lot of people will be very appreciative and they'll be very surprised to actually find many different varieties of drinks, you know, on your list.
Yeah.
So in terms of implementations, you know, on your part, what do you hope to implement in the next maybe 1 year down the road, since Singapore has just kind of just opened up, you know, with all the restrictions and SMM going away, are there any changes that you hope to implement for level 33?
Not much changes. Basically, this business has been running well for the past 11 plus years. It's good enough as it is. What I'm trying to do daily is more of trying to simplify the work process for my staff, for the company, from every department to every part. Yeah. A simple thing whereby the cutleries we are using now, instead of 2 types of cutleries, 4 different sizes, I limit it to only 1 type cutlery, 1 size. That's one of the changes.
Okay, so you're streamlining it.
Yeah. Okay, so with that, yeah, a little bit of expenditure here and there, but cutleries has been used for 11 years. I think the shelf life is quite good, really, you know. Next thing, we are into sustainability.
Okay.
Yeah, we are strong in sustainability, and that's why people who have apps such as SusGain, they can come here to redeem points. Right, in the end, they can plant a tree. We are trying to reduce carbon footprint. So we're trying to source for products that is nearer to Singapore.
Okay.
Yeah. That's one of the other things that my chef is trying to do. And even the kind of meat that we source, for example, is with, let's say our beef is from West Home, right? West Home beef is basically one of the best, number one beef supplier from Australia. And their cows are free range, free to move about. And they even have a name for the grass that is eaten by the cow.
Right, something very specific. It's a bit like Kobe beef or Wagyu, right?
Yeah.
There's something very specific about that.
So we are doing all this little thing.
Okay.
Mm.
Well, you mentioned about sustainability. So does the mash, you know, in your beer mash tin, are these collected and then used for something else?
Yes. They are actually reused back in the kitchen. So if you see our bread, most of our bread are basically used with spent grain and including our pasta.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a spent grain pasta. So pasta made with spent grain and flour as well, definitely. And then we made it in-house. Our bread has spent grain in it as well. So if let's say today you ordered a burger or even lobster roll, you have spent grain all over the top. It's crunchy, crispy. The bread is soft on the inside, but it's nice and it's messy. Yeah.
Nice and messy. So it's a messy, beautiful thing.
Okay. Beautiful mess.
Beautiful mess. Okay, that sounds better.
Apart from that, so our pastry kitchen is using it as well to make spent grain Valhona chocolate tart. So the tart is made of spent grain.
So nothing goes to waste. And
nothing.
Yeah. Pretty much everything from the beer making process goes into your food.
Yeah, even our waste, we have a waste management. So cardboards are separated, our glass bottles, our cans. So all this, when it's brought down in at a refuge in a basement, is separated as well. Because MBFC, under RQAM, they have such refuge for us to do the recycling.
Oh, very nice. Mm. Well, I didn't know this. And I think this is a very good, to me, this is a very good selling point. You know, everybody's about sustainability now.
Yes.
And I think Level 33 is doing a really good job at attaining that. Right. Now, how about, you know, we've been talking a little bit about Level 33, but your personal preference on wine, spirits, beer, and sake, what's your preference?
Okay, my preference is very simple. I'm a simple guy, simple man, you know. Every night when I go home, I open a can of Tiger beer.
Hey, that's a very Asian thing to say, and it's fine. We are an Asian podcast.
It's
so that's
because, firstly, it's cheaper. Secondly, it's easy. Even though I don't finish that can of beer, I just put it in the fridge. It won't lose much of its carbonation.
Okay.
I can continue the next day. Because, I mean, after a tough
day... Says a beer person, so it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not too flat beer, I still get a set.
Yeah. Okay, okay. Yeah. Why Tiger?
Okay. I learned this when I was in the airlines. I actually went for a Tiger tour before they closed down.
Okay,
at St.
Okay.
James, right?
Yep, yep.
So, during that tour, because of my Malaysian friends that came over, I learned that there's lemongrass in it. And from then on, whenever I drink Tiger, I always try to pick out that lemongrass scent in it.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And because of the history and things like that, and it's brewed locally.
Okay.
That's why I like it. If I go back to Malaysia, it tastes very different.
Yeah. So I was told. I mean, different places when they brew stuff, it's a bit like drinking Coke. Coca-Cola, you know, in different places, so they taste
like
different.
Last time we used to travel.
Yeah.
So wherever I go, I'll try to bring to drink their local beer there.
I see.
Yeah, something that I will enjoy in the end. Yeah.
So do you serve any other brands of beer here besides your own? Your own
brews? We do have one which we are not supposed to, but we do have it because it's a non-alcoholic beer.
why would that be
not supposed to? Everything we are selling now is our own brand. For example, whatever's on tap, Yeah. The canned form will be an impossible ale, which is made with a sugar substitute.
Okay.
So that's why it's low carb, low in alcohol, 3.5%. Another one would be a champagne beer. We should call it brut beer.
I see.
Yeah. So that's another interesting beer. So that last one that we are selling that is not our brand is Appelsbacher. It's actually from imported directly from Germany by our company as well.
I see. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of good information from you and your company. Hmm. Now, before we end the podcast, I was just wondering, do you have any personal aspirations? I know it is a tough time, especially, you know, when we have manpower crunch all around. But, you know, are you looking to progress in your career, maybe education, you know?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I asked you a few times already. I wanted to do my WSET 3.
Oh, okay. But yes,
time
yes.
is an issue for me right now.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah. And apart from that, also, definitely building myself towards owning my own F&B.
Ah.
Mm, that's the end goal. That's the end goal. Hopefully, it's not when I cannot walk anymore.
What kind of concept are you looking at?
Depends, because basically the food must be good, drinks must be good. I always have this concept whereby as and when someone requests something off the menu, I will always try my best to do it. It's not something that chefs like, because they're like, no, this is my menu, I'm serving this. But no, in my place, if you're going to be my chef, you're going to serve whatever I ask you going to serve. Yeah. Something, because it makes people happy, you know.
So, yeah.
Hey, today, yeah, I know you serve pizza, burger, whatever, but can I have a laksa? You know, it's something very, very different. But if you cook noodles for your staff, I'm sure you have noodles. The meat is there, maybe the spices, you know, get something off somewhere. You can always create something.
I think that's a very hospitable thing to say, you know, considering from your background, and it shouldn't be
like
tough.
What we always do in SIA.
Yeah, yeah. You never say no, right? Yeah. Never say no.
In a tube at 35,000 feet in the air, we are still churning things that we don't have. I still remember most vividly was when a business class passenger, old lady, traveling all by herself just to see her grandchildren. She asked for a soup, but we don't have soup on that day, on that flight. So I did a Bloody Mary without alcohol, without vodka. And then I just heat it up, make some croutons out of the bread that we have.
Oh, tomato soup.
Yeah, tomato soup. She said, oh, this is lovely. It's a simple thing as that. You know?
Nice. Yeah. So being flexible, I think that's key to successful hospitality, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good catching up with you.
Mm.
And I think that's probably a good time to wrap up our episode for this month. Now, here's a quick shout out to check out our website for schedules of our beverage certifications. It is running monthly. And have you all figured out the answer to the sake flashcard question yet? So I'm sure most of you studious sake students will probably figure it out by now. The answer is Hyogo. Okay, the answer is Hyogo. That's where you grow the best Yamada Nishiki rice. So finally, if you'd like to listen to more of such drinks content, please remember to like, subscribe, and follow our channel. And I look forward to seeing all of you at the next episode. And remember, a drink always tastes better when the company clicks. Cheers.
Cheers.